Note from the author. It has been such a privilege to write about my adopted home state, its proud history of bourbon making, and these wonderful, complicated, and sometimes broken people who live and work at Easterly. This series was born of my old school love for the television show Dynasty, fueled by my deep reverence for Kentucky, and directed by my fascination for how people and families evolve through stressful times. As a New Englander who was transplanted from one Commonwealth to another, I had a hard adjustment in the beginning. Now, well over a decade later, I can truly say that I can't imagine living anywhere else but here. The NCAA basketball tournament is happening right now, for example, and I have a huge TV set up in the foyer with six sofas and coffee tables arranged around it. The entire house is dismantled, and yesterday, a big crowd of friends was screaming and yelling at the games. There was also a boxing match in the basement during one halftime that resulted in a busted lip, as well as ping pong grudge matches that were nearly as bloody as the boxing. This kind of devotion to a college sport would have been unthinkable before I moved here. And what a joy and sorrow it is to me. My beloved Cardinals did not advance. The making of bourbon requires time and temperature. After the nascent alcohol is put into the charred barrels, it is stored in uninsulated conditions in the rack houses and left to interact with the caramelized sugars of the oak over the heat and the cold of the seasons. This dance and the alchemy that ensues is what gives bourbon its beautiful color and is part of how it gets that special taste. I've often thought the process is analogous to the way places, people, and various eras in our lives affect us, tempering our core characteristics, emphasizing certain traits, bringing forth our strengths, or highlighting our weaknesses. My two favorite terms of art from what I have learned about bourbon making and its traditions are the angel's share and the devil's cut. Roughly speaking, about 53 gallons of white dog are put into each barrel. But at the end of the aging process, much less than that actually comes out. This loss can be upward of 2% per year and happens due to evaporation, the angel's share, but also absorption into the oak of the barrel, the devil's cut. What this means is that if you age a bourbon for, say, 10 years, you may get around 43 gallons out the other side. And the longer it stays in there, the less you have on the far side. For example, some of the oldest Pappy Van Winkle, which has aged for 23 years, yields only 14 gallons of bourbon at the end of its rack house days. The angel's share is a romantic-sounding term. The devil's cut, something more sinister, although that is really because of the D word. In both cases, they refer to the environment owning a piece of that which is within it. In my situation, when I came down here, I never expected to like Kentucky, and I certainly wasn't interested in being influenced one way or the other by anything about it. Now, if God forbid I ever had to return to life in Boston, I would most certainly leave a piece of my soul in the land of the bluegrass. And you know, that seems only fair, given all the good that has come to me here and all the wonderful people I have met and things I have enjoyed. But again, I have no intention of going anywhere else anytime soon, God willing. I have absolutely loved writing these three books, and I thank you for taking some time for your life to have a stroll in through Easterly's grand front door and walk around her beautiful, complicated rooms. I'm so grateful I got to do this series. Oh, and go Cards! J.R. Ward. 1. Easterly, the Bradford Family Estate, Charlemont, Kentucky. There was someone trespassing down in the garden. In the lazy, hazy southern night, beneath the flowered, tasseled fruit trees, and between the saucer-sized tea roses and the squads of trimmed boxwood hedges, a figure was inside the ivied walls, moving over the brick paths, heading for the back of the mansion like a stalker. Jonathan Tulane Baldwin squinted and leaned closer into his bedroom window. Whoever it was, they were in a crouch and sticking to the shadows, and the efficiency with which they chose their way suggested they knew what they were doing and where they were going. Then again, it wasn't that hard to find a 20,000-square-foot white birthday cake of a house in the dark. Turning away from the wavy old glass, he looked to his bed. Lizzie King, the love of his life, was deeply asleep in